This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across South Texas, this is the Spurs Insider brought to you by Taco Palenque. I'm Mike Finger, joined by our usual panel of Express News, Spurs beat writers Jeff McDonald and Tom Orsborn, with sports editor Nick Talbot. Lots to get to this week. The continuing exploits of Victor Wembanyama. A late season push for our local Cagers. But before we get started, to start the show, I would be remiss if I did not check in with the great Tom Orsborn and ask him, How are you mentally, how are you emotionally after that scrape with that criminal element that we encountered up at the Moody Center in Austin last week?
Traumatic experience. the likes I've never seen in an NBA game.
But you are okay?
I am. But I wasn't, I wasn't as involved or wasn't a witness to it as much as you were, Mike, but
well, I just felt for you because you seemed to not really react to this physically. But sometimes I know that, you know how the human body, you were shaken. It seemed like you were shaken.
Yeah.
You didn't really react at all.
Yeah. PTSD, maybe not to make light of that, but yeah
exactly. Exactly.
I was shaken a little bit. You know, we had what happens often in European sports, I guess, but I termed them hooligans.
Hooliganism.
Moody Center. Yeah.
Would you guys like to explain to the listeners and readers what's going on right now?
I'm sure the listeners and readers just can't wait to hear. But Friday night, right? Up at the Moody Center in Austin, a sparkling new building in its second year. Lovely city of Austin. Great fans all over, but they were hooligans that somehow made their way into the press seating right behind a good friend, not just a good friend, a great friend of the podcast, Cedric Golden of the Austin American Statesman, was sitting next to Tom and I. And, we're sitting right in front of us. There's a row of, I'm not exaggerating, right, Tom? Multiple fathers, multiple sons.
Yeah, it was a family
all grade
crowd.
School age. It was a family crowd. Family crowd. A precocious, impressionable young people. And this hooligan who'd made his way into the press seating right behind Cedric Golden and you and I just starts insulting. This is where the listeners might be intrigued by this. A certain player for the San Antonio Spurs with just vulgarities, the likes of which I've never heard before.
And that's not an exaggeration. He went after one Victor Wembanyama hard and angry and profanity laced. Yeah, it really was bad.
Questioning his upbringing, his work ethic. There was a lazy expletive several times. You bum, you expletive.
Expletive, yes.
Yes, over and over. Like it was shocking in a way, Tom. I know we live kind of a sheltered life here. We don't often see this kind of hooliganism in American sports. But yeah, the guy had been a little overserved. Seems like he had all the he was clad in all the trappings of what you might consider a frat bro, if I can be stereotypical. And this is only the beginning of the story, because the great friend of the podcast, Cedric Golden, sticking up for these youngsters that were around, turned around and said, "Hey, you need to be quiet. You need to stop acting like this, especially in the press seating. You're not supposed to be here." And the guy just unloaded on Cedric in the same way he was unloading on Victor Wembanyama, and called Cedric by name because he recognized the famous Cedric Golden from the Austin American Statesman. And it gets to the point where this is putting a taint on the whole fine experience of watching the Spurs in Austin.
It was tense.
It was tense. Long story short, and that might be too late for a long story short by now, but this went on for the majority of the first half. By halftime, there was security. Security, this is where I will criticize the Moody Center a little bit. The security person who was brought over to deal with the situation was not what I would consider to be an intimidating security person, right, Tom?
No, like he wasn't. But Chris Davis from the Spurs made an attempt to.
He did. He was trying to be diplomatic.
Yes, yes.
He's trying to be diplomatic. He brought over a gentleman in a very nice blazer who also tried to get rid of him. And I was told we don't have firsthand accounts of this, but witnesses told me that when this hooligan was removed, after, by the way, on his way out, he cursed at me. He cursed at you a little bit, Tom. He definitely cursed at Cedric. Poured his little vodka drink out all over the press area. And I was told that when the cops came to get him out on the concourse, he ran,
bolted
from the arena, did not stand to fight. And which was funny, because much of his argument with the security and with the Spurs personnel was that he had a right to be there. There was a quote in particular where he said he looked up the company. And press row, all the seats are marked by your name. Like Tom, it says Tom Orsborne, San Antonio Express News. Well, this fella was sitting in an empty seat. He said he looked up the company that was marked on the marker, and he said the company does not exist, so anyone has a right to sit there. And Tom, you mentioned that was a pretty good legal argument, you thought?
I think so. I think a first-year public defender may be able to run with that.
Yeah. Well, whether or not he will need the services of a public defender, I'm not sure, because he ran away from the police.
He's still in the wind.
But we're starting the podcast. I just want to make sure Tom's okay, because he seems shaken by that. And I hope it didn't affect your ability to chronicle, cover, appreciate the Spurs in Austin for two games over the weekend.
I think I fared okay. I think I soldiered through it.
That's good to know.
But it was quite a scene, and we're not used to that. You know, the fans in San Antonio, they respect the family atmosphere.
If that would have happened in San Antonio, the head coach Greg, would have stepped in.
Bench may not agree with that at times. So
we needed Greg Popovich to come to the mic and tell the people in press row to settle down.
That's right.
That's not who we are. Who the Spurs are continues to be who they've been for much of the season. We saw them play the Denver Nuggets, the defending champs, in a game that was all too familiar to the listeners of this podcast and to viewers of the local Cagers all season. Kind of hung in there, dug a big hole, sort of dug their way back out of it, and came up short. And then against the Brooklyn Nets two nights later, one of the better late game execution displays that we've seen from the Spurs in a while. Forced the overtime, pulled away in overtime. Where do you see just the state of the Cagers after these Austin games, Jeff McDonald?
Well, I saw them from like courtside, so I wasn't involved in all this hooliganism up top with you guys. I had a first.
Right, so you had a better, clearer picture, so you can speak to the basketball.
And we don't need to talk about the Denver game. That, like you said, it's a game that we saw a million times this year already. But how about that Nets game? Like, that was something else.
It's a hell of a game.
One of the great Victor Wembanyama games of the year in terms of numbers, obviously, but also just, again, jaw-dropping highlights. And he had some of those moments that we've talked about before where an entire building isn't even cheering. They're just laughing. They're just laughing out loud at the absurdity of the play that they just witnessed. So, that was a fun one for everyone involved, I think. And if you're the Spurs, the Spurs looking at it in terms of signs of progress this season, that Brooklyn game's a good one because, as you mentioned, they had to execute some stuff in overtime in order to get that done, and they actually did it. So that's a step forward.
It was a huge, huge Victor Wembanyama game, as you mentioned. The stats are absurd, as they often are. Before you do, they don't get to overtime without a fittingly appropriate performance in the if you're going to name something the I-35 series, you need a big game from the biggest Bucky's fan in the NBA or a big performance. And Keldon Johnson came up pretty big in the closing minutes of regulation to force the overtime. And then in overtime, you had Victor Wembanyama being Victor Wembanyama, but a team play, a well conceived by the coaching staff play at the end I believe it was a pass from Jeremy Sochan to
Vassell.
Devin Vassell on a pick and roll with Victor going to the rim and a perfect lob from Vassell for the Wembanyama dunk. There were contributions not only from Victor, but from a lot of his teammates that made that game sort of encouraging if you look to the future for your local Cagers.
Yeah,
that was the go-ahead bucket right there in overtime.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he had they connected with a lob dunk late in regulation as well. There's great chemistry between those two, and we've seen it kind of progressing with hits and misses, false starts, but they seem to finally have connected pretty well. And Keldon played a heck of a game. As Pop said, well, it actually was his best shooting performance ever. His splits across the line were great. He hadn't had a shooting performance like that, interestingly, since the bubble, since those two games in the bubble when he kind of emerged and Pop dubbed him the young Mustang or whatever it was. But, it was an outstanding performance. Like Pop said, you don't win in the NBA without guys hitting three, and he was 5 of 8. That night, just a great performance for him.
That couldn't be under two more polar opposite circumstances. I mean, the bubble, there's no fans, and Austin, it's hooligans.
That's true.
He can thrive at both extremes.
Yeah. So they run the play to get the lob to Victor for the go ahead bucket, and then they have to call time up one. They have to call timeout, and you're going, oh no, like this doesn't work out usually. But then they ran another play to perfection. They got Keldon a layup that pushed up three and kind of, gave them the breathing room they needed to win that game. So I think when you talk about them learning, that was a good game to display that. And then, they'll probably come out there tonight against Dallas and look like they've never played together before, because that's the way this young team is sometimes, the ups and downs of it. But for a night, they looked like a well-oiled machine in the Tim Tony Manu vein. I mean, except for the play at the end of regulation. But in overtime, they looked like a well-oiled machine of the Tim Tony and Manu vintage.
Well, there was it seems like there was a step not only from the players in the court, but the Pop called some timeouts that he didn't call necessarily at Sacramento, most notably.
Learned his lesson, I guess.
Learned his lesson. Yeah, it seems like, you know, in a season like this, when the Spurs are going to lose more games, probably, than they ever have a season in their entire 50-year existence, it's fine to sort of appreciate and note the nights like Sunday when things don't look so bad. And in fact, things look kind of promising. So there you go.
You want to do some viewer mail? We all got a viewer mail, and he gave us a topic he would like to see addressed, and we can address.
Well, we've gotten a couple of these, and
I like to give the people what they want.
Well, the thing is, a couple of people asking about why they're playing in Austin, and it seems like we talked about this a whole lot last year, wrote a whole lot about it.
That was a year ago. And might need a refresher.
Well, the point is, and the way to bring it current is that the reasons have sort of the whole dynamic around it has changed dramatically from a year ago, mainly because of Victor Wembanyama. If you think back to a year ago, when the Spurs first announced the I-35 series, that they were going to play two games in Austin, and in fact wanted to play more, if we go way back in time. This is a team that was at the bottom of the NBA standings with no star players, really, really struggling to draw fans at home, no clear idea of when things were going to get better in the future. Also, with an arena that is growing antiquated and sort of non-ideal in modern NBA standards.
And had recently added an investor group from Austin.
So you combine all this stuff, and then the Spurs say, ask the county, Bear County, if they can play multiple games per year outside of San Antonio, in Austin and in Mexico. And there's some panic in the streets. There was some panic in the streets, which we tried to allay a bit on this podcast and in the pages of the San Antonio Express News on expressnews.com. The goal there, talking to RC Buford, the CEO, various people with the Spurs, was, hey, we're in the middle of a pretty good financial region. A lot of money in Austin, a lot of money in Monterrey, Mexico. Let's try to take advantage of it. Let's expand our base. Let's get some of that money from the companies in Austin to maybe become corporate sponsors, to maybe invest in becoming Spurs fans, get some of those, play a couple games in Austin. Maybe some of those fans drive down after enjoying a Spurs experience. They want to come down to the Frost Bank Center, that kind of thing. That's how that strategy was pitched by the Spurs to the public. The public wasn't necessarily buying into that whole hog, because they worried that if we're not filling the arena in San Antonio, and if the Spurs think they can do more somewhere else, well, are they going to move? And there was, like I said, there was panic in the streets. Well, then you win the lottery, and all that, the tone of this changes drastically. And correct me if I'm wrong at any point, but now you have Victor Wembanyama, who's the future face of the NBA. Now you have sponsors, like almost immediately, the arena that had no sponsorship deal in San Antonio, the AT&T Center. It went a year without a new sponsor. AT&T just kind of hung on to their previous deal. Well, now Frost Bank can't wait to sign up to be the naming sponsor of the arena. Now you have all these stories about how the Spurs and the city are working together on a possible new arena downtown, which is what they wanted all along. That there's no guarantees that's going to happen. But it looks like that's underway. Talks at least are underway. Mm-hmm. Now you can go to Austin for a couple of games, and no one's really worried about. I don't think I'm not going to speak for all the listeners, but I haven't heard nearly as much panic in the streets about, are the Spurs going to move to Austin anymore? So it can be a little more of a fun one-off, despite the hooligans. Fun, one weekend trip to Austin. I'll let Tom and Jeff weigh in there, but that's kind of the Cliff's Notes.
Well, you know, Mike, that was a great recap. And you know, we've spilled a lot of ink on this story as well. And, you know, I don't know if that spilling ink applies to digital stories, but we're, you know, for the newspaper, certainly. And a lot of people have written
used
about
a lot
this.
Of bites.
A lot of people have written about this. Jeff, you, me, a lot of our news side people, some of our op-ed people have even weighed in on this.
That's true. We've had congressmen weighing in on our op-ed pages.
Yes, yes. But with all that said, the news apparently did not make its way into the Rocky Mountains, into Colorado out west. The news did not travel.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I thought you were referring to a.
It's kind of humbling. It's kind of humbling because we work really hard to get the news out, but sometimes
we really thought Michael Malone had a subscription to the Express News, at least a digital one. Like we were led to believe.
Do we think that Michael Malone was talking about the Austin game specifically, or was he being sort of existential and philosophical
about
our time here on Earth?
Maybe both.
I think he was talking about the Austin game.
I don't even know. I don't know what we're doing here, to be honest.
That is what Michael Malone said. Yeah. Well, okay. In his defense, or not in his defense, but just to kind of expand on the context for this, before the game on Friday, there was, I think, one of the Denver broadcasters had prefaced a question by saying, you know, people are calling this a neutral site game. Which, by the way, nobody is. It's a Spurs home game. A Spurs home game. But the broadcaster said, people are calling this a neutral site game. What do you think about that? That was kind of a false question because it's a home game. But Michael Malone says, well, I don't know why we're here, to be honest with you. And, you know, I thought that was funny. A lot of people thought
that was funny. Yeah, sure.
The thing is, if you are Michael Malone or one of these opposing coaches, like, you're just looking at the schedule coming up and this pops up out of nowhere, maybe. Like, this isn't a thing that is there another team that does this? Has done
it's
this?
It's been a long time. Going back to like when Boston used to play games in Hartford, which predates the Michael Malone era.
Yeah. So I can understand the confusion. Yeah.
Sure.
It's also a commentary on how coaches are so, you know, they've got blinders on during the season, a lot of them.
Right. He was sort of annoyed. Wasn't he annoyed that it was during South by Southwest? Like, if you like music, I guess this is a good place to be.
Yeah. I thought he was actually pumping it up.
Oh, okay. Maybe he was.
I didn't think he was being sarcastic.
Oh, well, maybe you're right.
I thought him and our friend Bill Schoening were going to go out for a blues band or something after.
Maybe they did.
Okay. The one question I have with these Austin games, which I guess are probably going to continue, we would assume.
I would think so. Well, ask your question, and then I'll get to my comment on that.
What happens if the Spurs are good, or maybe not even, maybe almost good? What if they're fighting for a playoff spot? I think that would be the question. If you're fighting for a playoff spot and every win in March and April is absolutely crucial to you either getting in the playoffs or not, does it make sense to play a game that is not in your absolute home arena? And I guess my question, after seeing four of these games now, what do we think about that hypothetical?
I think that all that kind of stuff is, you know, it's always talked about and hashed about, looked at for a reason, for an excuse or you know, whatever. But if you're good enough, you win anywhere. I mean, the Spurs, you know, during the Golden Duncan era, they had the rodeo road trip and they excelled at it. It's just, if you're good enough, you're going to win. If you're not, you're not. And I don't think that has much, you know, I don't buy into that. I think, you know, they can win there. If they're a good team, they'll win there, and so be it.
I tend to agree with that. And I think, having seen the four games, you see how those are some of the best crowds of the year. Like, even last year,
they loved that crowd. That crowd was great. Both
even
games.
Even last year when the team was terrible. I mean, I guess the record is bad this year too. But you have Victor this year. You had something to come out for. Last year, you really didn't have that, and the crowd was still great.
So I
think it would still be a home game in that sense. I do wonder, like, all things considered, would you rather be in your own bed, your own environment, for a big game that means something? I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate.
Sure.
For the stats gurus, what is the Spurs record in the Moody Center?
They're 2-2.
2-2. Yeah.
What is the Spurs record outside the Moody Center over the past 2 years?
Yeah. Good point.
What I think I would do is I wouldn't schedule the Denver Nuggets there. Or maybe I would. Maybe I would.
Yeah.
You know, if that's a game you're going to probably lose anyway, go lose it in Austin.
No, I think you two got where I was going to go with this question, and that it's still a, it might be as well, they're not sleeping in their own beds. It's sort of a hotel game.
It's a different gym, different sidelines.
It's a different gym, but it's a home court advantage in every other sense. The crowd is as into the Spurs at the Moody Center as the crowd is into the Spurs at the Frost Bank Center.
Let me stir that pot.
Also, to get into the two other things on the timing of the games during the NBA season. We've had people ask about this, and we've mentioned it last year. It's worth mentioning it again. The Moody Center is operated by the University of Texas, which is a little school.
I've heard of them.
It's a little school up there in Austin.
I think I've heard of it.
And they, while they haven't come out and said, you're not allowed to play in this arena while our season is going on, that's kind of the understanding. Like the Longhorns would rather the Spurs not schedule these games while the men's and women's basketball teams are still playing their season. And it's sort of understandable. Like the entertainment dollar is there's a limit on it. It's not unlimited. And so the feeling is like if people are buying tickets to Spurs games during the season, maybe they won't go to the Longhorns game the next night. So last year, those two games were played the last two of the season in April after the Final Four. This year, they actually moved it up a little bit to where the women's team was finished. The men's team was scheduled to be in Kansas City for the Big 12 tournament. They won't play another home game again this year. That's why these games are played in mid-March rather than during the rodeo road trip, which would have made way more sense Spurs-wise. So I'm not sure they ever get past that issue of having to play these games late in the season, whether it's mid-March, early April. That's one thing that just might be a sticking point forever.
And I can tell you the Spurs would love to play them during the rodeo road trip if they were allowed. They would take that deal in a heartbeat.
Yes. And we have to be careful with the word allowed. If UT was just cool with it, if UT said absolutely
amenable.
Amendable. The other thing is Jeff asked how long they're going to play these games. I think the whole point of trying to tap into that market, trying to get fans there, I think the Spurs are always going to be interested in that. Long term, I wonder if they will continue, though, if the Spurs ever get their arena downtown. Like that might, I don't have any inside intel on that, but I might assume that that would lead to a reevaluation of the entire schedule, if that makes sense. Like if you have this sparkling new arena that costs a lot of money, aren't you going to want to play 41 games there? I don't know. Those questions are worth asking in the years to come.
Makes sense to me. We'll ask them on a podcast in 2043.
Oh, I think it'll be before that. Sometime in the 2030s, I think.
All right, we'll ask it on a podcast in the 2030s.
anything else basketball wise? We got to a lot this week.
We did. We did.
And we're not even at our half hour yet. Nick Talbot is the ombudsman here, the overseer. Have we missed anything, Nick?
I think the only thing we ever touched on was Victor Wembanyama talking about Defensive Player of the Year.
Oh, there we go.
And his thoughts on that.
Deep boy.
Deep boy. On the deep boy.
I'm not making fun. I'm not making fun. But apparently in France, that's what they call it.
That's what they call it. Yeah, the deep boy.
I would have.
I'd never heard of that abbreviation before.
I
but it makes sense.
You see it a lot.
English.
You see it a lot on Twitter.
DP, just people will abbreviate it for Twitter purposes.
But pronounced out loud.
People, I would have thought in French it would have been Depois.
Depois, yeah.
This is exactly where I thought you were going when I asked this question.
Well, yeah. Well, Greg Popovich was asked the other day what he thinks about Victor and the Depoy, and that was fun.
Anyway, Rudy's.
What do you think about Depoy?
Victor said, what Victor said basically is Rudy can have it this year, but yeah, I'm paraphrasing. Rudy Gobert can have it this year, but after that, you know, it's mine.
You're paraphrasing because he said it in French.
Well, whatever.
That was a good, that was by our friend Teo, right, Tom? That question?
Yes, yes.
Teo asked that question.
He said, I know that Rudy, yes, he did. Our French colleague, young French colleague, only 23 years old. I know that Rudy has a very good chance of winning it this year, and it would be deserved. Let him win it now, because after that, it's no longer his turn.
There you go.
And I watched, Teo showed me the video, because obviously when he's answering live, we're all working on our French, but we can't really track what's happening in real time. At least I can't. I'll speak for myself. I can't. But when you rewatch it with the translation, you see that his little laugh there, like Victor's not saying that with a scowl on his face.
Yeah, his turn.
He's chuckling through it, knowing that he's making kind of a joke.
And to put it into context, him and Rudy, you have a close relationship. Rudy's a mentor of sorts. They have great respect for each other.
Yeah.
So Gobert's going to win it this year, I guess. But man, you watch Victor play since the All-Star break, and it's hard. It's hard not to want to vote for him sometimes. I think I saw this stat. Victor Wembanyama since the All-Star break, or maybe the second half of the season, I don't know, 51 blocks. The guys in number two and number three place since the All-Star break have combined for 51 blocks.
51 blocks. There's also an understandable, and I can't believe I've gotten sucked into an award.
Yeah, well, look, Nick did it to you. Blame Nick this time.
Which I just do not care about. But there's a rationale out there that you can't give that award to a player on one of the worst defensive teams in the league, which I totally understand, and I think that's legitimate. Jeff, you might have these numbers. I think we were talking about them not too long ago.
I don't have
ago.
Them offhand, but they're not the but, worst defensive team when he's on the floor.
Right. The if you want to talk about impact, like the Spurs with Victor Wembanyama on the floor are not the 23rd best defense in the league. They're way up there.
I believe they're top five.
Without them, without Victor Wembanyama on the floor, they're one of the worst defensive teams of all time.
Of all time. So the average of
and that's
that,
not an exaggeration. Yes. Like with Victor off the floor, they are a horrendous defensive team. Yeah, with him on the floor, they're pretty good. They average it out, and they're below middle of the pack. But to say that Victor can't be Depoy. Because he's on a bad defense. Well, it's not a bad defense when he's on the floor.
He might finish second. I mean, he's going to get votes.
He's certainly all defense.
You know, you get to vote for three of them, so he's going to get votes.
Is he one of the best 15 players in the league?
Man.
For all pro?
Maybe. Yes. Just a lot of guards.
Or all NBA? Yeah. That Nets positionless, right?
Yeah, we had this discussion last week or a couple weeks ago. He'd be better served if it was not positionless.
Yeah.
For that particular All-NBA discussion. He'd be one of the centers for sure, I would think.
We'll wind it down, Jeff Scott. Shoot around. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, to bring this full circle, you know, we started out with talking about the hooligans, the disruption up in the upper media section, Friday night's game. On Sunday, there was another disruption. This was on Press Row, closer to where Jeff McDonald was sitting. And I had the good fortune to sit there as well on Sunday. To my right was a fellow, was an imposter, not a hooligan, but an imposter. There was a gentleman sitting next to me. He had no press. He had no press pass whatsoever. And he was just sitting there, you know, there on Press Row, courtside.
Washington State ball cap.
Yes, yes. And Eagle Eye Chris Davis, who had a busy weekend. He spotted this guy, and strong armed him out of there. It took a while, but he finally got him booted. But the guy told me after Chris, I think he said this to Chris. He said, I used to be a sports writer. I was a print. No, he did say that to me. He said, I was a print journalist. I was a newspaper writer. I covered
Roger Chavez.
He says, in fact, I covered the Warriors during the TMC days.
Wow.
So it, there was all kind of hijinks going on at the Moody Center.
It was sort of like that Leonardo DiCaprio movie, Catch Me If You Can.
That's right.
Except with a schlubby sports writer.
Yeah. But if you're going to break in like that, you're going to be an imposter. I think you'd wear some kind of press pass, try to forge something. But he had nothing. And he
was sitting encouraging this behavior among our listeners.
He was sitting
in want people to do
he
this.
Was sitting in a seat that was supposed to go to our friend Raul Dominguez of the Associated Press.
Yes.
And Chris ran him out of there by halftime. And then the second half, some guy from Axios sat there.
Yeah.
like no one's following the rules in this place.
Yeah.
Did he use the brilliant legal strategy of I looked up Associated Press online and this company does not exist?
That's right.
That's what the hooligan said.
Hey, there was another twist to that with the guy, the hooligan, who said this company doesn't exist. There was a misspelling of the company name.
That's
and I think
true.
That's the loophole that would get the case dismissed.
He was sitting at the spot that was conceivably reserved for the Hill Country News, but he found a typo that could exonerate him if he's ever apprehended and tried in a jury trial, because you look at the placard there on his seat and it said Hilly Country News.
It's like getting a speeding ticket and they misspell your name.
Right. So that might save him, because I don't think the Hilly Country News exists. He's right about that.
Now, yeah, I know from experience you still have to pay those tickets.
Right.
Now, does that mean that he's allowed to hurl obscenities, vulgar obscenities at Victor Wembanyama and Cedric Golden? I don't think so.
But you, way, yes, he should definitely hurl that's the vulgarities at you.
Well, when he was escorted away and he was pouring his vodka all over the place, there was this standing ovation from the fathers and the sons. I enjoyed that. They all turned and waved and cheered as he left.
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more.
When we leave today, as we're leaving right now, we're not going to treat people like that. We're not going to pour our metaphorical vodka all over these listeners and act like we have a right to be where we don't want to be. We want to earn our spot in your digital musical players. We want to earn our spot. We want to be in your earbuds, in your cars, in your home stereos, because we feel like we belong there. We've earned our spot. And I think that's good advice for all of us as we tackle the week ahead. Show that you belong. Show that you deserve to be where you are. Keep working to earn people's trust. And in the meantime, take care of each other and keep it real.